when it comes to most other cultural traditions, you know, there's no tie. You can coexist Christianity with those, but you can't say, yeah, circumcision and living by the law will save you, and Jesus Christ will save you. You can't do both at the same time.
Okay, so we have an issue of not just Jewish culture, but Jewish religion, if you will. Okay? Paul deals with both of these issues in his letters to different churches. Okay? Can anyone give me an example of one of those debates that he actually answers?
Eating meat sacrificed.
Meat sacrificed to idols. What was the concern of either party of meat sacrificed to idols? Everybody remember that one?
The weaker brother stumbling the weaker brother.
Okay. So they're in this culture where pagan worship would involve offering an animal in sacrifice to a pagan temple. And after it was sacrificed, they would sell that meat at a cheap, you know, at a huge discount. And so the cheapest food you can find is the meat that had been sacrificed to an idol. So here you've got people, both Jews and Gentiles, potentially, who could go and they could buy some of this meat sacrificed to idols. The Jew was saying that that's pagan worship you're engaging in. You cannot do that. The Gentiles are like, it's meat. Paul comes in, he says, it's just meat. Right? But in order to keep from offending the Jews, don't eat it. So we have this issue that because it has immediate religious significance to the contemporary culture, they were advised to stay away from it. Would you have a problem living in a culture that sacrificed animals to a pagan deity? Would you have a problem with going and buying and eating that meat?
So I guess, I mean, like the way I've read it, so you were talking about the one in 1 Corinthians, right? When he addresses it in 1 Corinthians, he also addresses it here in Acts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the opposite. He's telling them not to.
Okay.
So who's he talking to? He's talking to people coming just out of pagan worship, right? So he's telling them just stay away from it. Now, why would he tell them to stay away from it but say it's okay for the Jews? Because these guys are just coming out of this sin, just maybe within weeks, some of them, and he's saying, avoid this. It's like telling an alcoholic, stay away from alcohol. Even though you're converted, stay away from it because you'll probably fall right back into this.
Right.
I think it's more, so in Corinthians, I think it's more of not because you might offend someone, but you might actually cause them to sin. So you might be eating that meat in front of a former pagan that is going to cause them to fall back into that same sin. So I think it's not as much about offending as it is to actually causing a weaker brother or sister to go back to the sin that just came out of, and they can't handle that.
Okay.
Maybe the Jew can handle it. The Jew can do it without sinning. The pagan might not be able to do it without sinning.
Is that showing up on the recording, or do we know that yet? It is. Okay. All right. So Paul is going to point out this could be an offense issue, but it also could very well be a sin issue. Okay? If Paul, as a leader and as a teacher, is going to do something, not just teach something, but do something, he's actually teaching through his actions. It's okay to do what I'm doing. It's okay to not do what I'm not doing. Right? So let's say he's with a group that thinks it's okay to eat meat sacrificed to idols, and so he's there eating meat sacrificed to idols, and a weaker brother comes in who thinks that that's offensive or thinks that that could be potentially an idol worship issue. What is Paul saying to do? He's saying stop eating it right then and there. That said, if he were eating it and this guy who's offended by it sees Paul, he's going to have a problem with Paul. You are teaching that we can be engaged in idol worship. Okay? This is a big deal. This is a huge deal. So is it okay for Paul to say to one group in this instance, be engaged in the activities of the temple, but to this other group, you don't be engaged to the activities in the temple? Is it okay for Paul to be out in the Greek countryside, not taking part in temple issues, but as soon as he gets to Jerusalem, jumping back into temple issues. Is this an appropriate thing for Paul to be doing, or is this a mistake? If there's a brand new Jewish believer, which it's hard for us to realize what a change Judaism to Christianity actually is, because Judaism was all, like we've talked about, works and earning a right place before God. That was their mentality. So you've heard about Jesus' sacrifice for your sins, and he is the perfect sacrifice for your sins. And so I believe, and a week later, Paul shows up, the great Paul, and he jumps right back into the temple doing the things that this young guy used to do. Is that helpful for his faith? Is that a hindrance to his faith?
This is a struggle for us because we're not part of that culture. But here's this brand new Christian, and all of a sudden, all these rituals and things that he's been doing his whole life, all of a sudden they are fulfilled. He now understands why. It makes sense. It's like, this is incredible. And just like a devout Christian will fast, not that there's earning any, you know, brownie points in heaven for fasting, but just like that, this Jewish Christian is going, this is extraordinary. This is now my act of devotion and worship. This isn't how I'm getting to heaven, but because I'm going to heaven, this has incredible meaning to me now. And we're trying to second guess 2,000 years later a culture that we don't even understand. So the same Paul that was doing this is the one who stood up to the Apostle Peter himself and chewed him out publicly.
Okay.
So is Paul inconsistent, or is there a whole lot more going on here than maybe we can even begin to grasp as, you know, Gentile Christians 2,000 years later?
Okay. So if we struggle with the separation of 2,000 years and a totally different kind of culture, let's pick one that we do live in. So, Sunday best. Everybody heard what your Sunday best is? Everybody understanding? Nice clothes? Baptism, communion. This church doesn't really hold to the Sunday best kind of mentality. I was in Papua New Guinea, where everybody owns exactly one set of clothes. One t-shirt and one pair of shorts, and you never take them off until they fall off, and then you have to go get another one. Okay? Saturday morning, we were driving around in the bush. There were men walking around in three-piece suits. They were a part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Seventh-day Adventist. Still teach a Sunday best is an appropriate sacrifice to please God. Okay, baptism, specifically baptismal regeneration. The idea that your baptism is what saves you. There are a number of churches who still teach this. Either so-called believer's baptism or infant baptism. The issue of it being a means of grace or salvation. Communion. There are a couple rather large Christian denominations who hold to communion being absolutely necessary for a person's salvation. And when I say communion, I mean the way that we do it. There's a cracker, there's some juice, and you take it, and there's some prayers, and there's some, it's solemn, and it's all that kind of stuff. It's another means of grace. It's a salvation thing. And there's others to deal with here. Somebody comes into this church, and they are absolutely certain their right standing before God is based on one of these three things. And they see us engaging in one of these three things. Have we done them a disservice by encouraging them in their false belief because we are doing what they're doing or not? Now, granted, before we get there, we could talk about cultural issues. I picked three specifically religious issues. You could have, like, raging alcoholism and drug use. Yeah, if somebody comes into the church and we're all stoned, that's probably not going to be right, but everybody gets that. Okay?
Regardless, I think.
Regardless of the background. You know, if we're doing communion where everybody has a keg, there's probably a problem. Not cultural issues. These are specifically religious Christian issues. Renee. Okay, so we have issues of the heart.
Well, so what you're looking at is, like, so baptism and communion, I don't get the Sunday best one because I don't really participate in it. So as far as baptism and communion go, though, those are worship, right? Designed for worship. But like, so when you're doing it for salvation, you're not doing it for worship. You're doing it for works at religious reasons, right? So when you, let's say you convert out of that, like, okay, I no longer believe that I've been doing it wrong my whole life. I've been, where was I going? When you convert out of it, you've been doing it wrong your whole life, and all of a sudden, bam, I don't believe this anymore. I believe it is for worship, not salvation. I've been sinning when I do it because of my pride, right? I've been thinking that it's something I'm doing to earn my salvation. So because of my pride, I've been sinning while I'm doing it. Now I'm not, but there's still going to be that struggle there the very next day. You know, like, you're not just going to snap out of it. There's still going to be something there, like, to where it's like, okay, yesterday I was doing this out of pride. Mm-hmm. Today I'm doing it out of worship. So we're, like Renee was saying, where's our heart in it? Are we doing it for worship? Sometimes we're doing it because we just do it. And that might just be the exact same sin of doing it for salvation. We're not actually worshiping when we're doing it. When we're singing, are we really worshiping, or are we just doing it because that's what we do as Christians?
Right. I was going to say, there's actually kind of three options, if not more. Doing it for works, doing it from the heart, and doing it because you don't have a clue why.
Yeah.
That's right. Is that the end of the conversation? Is Paul held to that standard, or is of my heart, my works, me, or is he held to a standard of leading others because he's an apostle and because he's a public voice? Is he held to a different standard? He might be doing it from a right heart, but what about who he's leading? What happens if somebody else with a wrong heart sees Paul and what he's doing, and engages. Actually, we weren't talking about Paul. We were talking about us. Sees us engage in once a month taking of the cracker and the juice, and they have the good for one more month. Have we been responsible as leaders?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a different standard, because whatever you do, whatever decisions you make for your gathering.
Okay.
Because, and I mean, I've been to quite a few churches, and there's a lot of variation. Some of that's wonderful, and some of that really makes you scratch your head. Like, wait, you know, how long have they been doing it this way?
Right.
Because this isn't right. And you see, of course, you see it on TV with the television.
Right.
So, yeah, and some you just kind of nod your head and go, I don't believe it, but I know who they got to answer to. Someday. So.
Okay. The next one I wrote on the list is the study of the Bible. Do you remember that Jesus actually confronted the Jewish leadership on this issue? You read the word because you think that in them you find life. And he's actually condemning them for their trust in the word, or what they would call trust in the word. The reason I bring that one up late in the game is, I don't think, well, there have been some people who said get rid of all of it. None of it. It could potentially lead people astray. We are probably not going to make a big deal out of any of these explicitly, and yet I think that we are going to still continue to engage in these things, teaching correctly, and hopefully leading others to have the right heart in these things. But I want us to be aware of what we are doing that could potentially be a stumbling block for someone else. And a real stumbling block. Like Chuck doesn't understand the Sunday best thing. I think he is dressed up. I can still see his tattoo. Come on. We have had folks here who honestly struggle with, I can't go to church without dressing down. I have to have my absolute best on. And they struggle with why. Why am I like that? Why do I believe that? Why do I engage in that? It's a struggle. It's a serious struggle for issues like this. And Paul jumps right into the mix. He's going to jump in and he's going to engage in this temple sacrifice. Now, we did reference 1 Corinthians 9. It starts in 19. But he's talking about a whole bunch of stuff going on in there. Because he actually enters into this description of, I was a Jew to the Jew and a Gentile to the Gentile. I was all things to all men so that I might save some. He's coming at it from the perspective of, as an apostle, I had the right to be paid by you guys. Other apostles get paid by the people that they serve, but we chose not to. I was free to be paid, but I chose to not get paid. That's actually how he enters into the discussion in 1 Corinthians 19. So, that in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my rights in the gospel. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not myself being under the law, that I might win those who are under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being actually outside the law, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. So, that does seem to be Paul's heart attitude. He is not wanting to offend, but he's wanting to lead in the truth, and yet he's doing it in a way that's sticky. It kind of sounds like how Jesus' ministry looked. You're eating dinner with who? Prostitutes? What's going on in there? With tax collectors? Are you receiving some sort of finance here? What's going on there? So Jesus was actively engaging in what looked like sticky business. Paul, the same thing. Their heart attitude was right, and yet they were engaging in the sharing of the gospel and the teaching and the love of God's people. Okay? Are we willing to engage in that apparently sticky business? Okay. Let's go back through what was going on here just so we're aware. This James, this is in Acts 21, verse 18. On the following day, Paul went with us to James, and all the elders were present. There's a question of whether or not any of the 12 are in this group. Okay, this is not James, one of the 12. This is James, the brother of Jesus, and the elders of the church. It's possible, finally, the apostles, the 12, actually obeyed the command to go. They had stayed in Jerusalem for far too long already, so it's possible they already went. Verse 19, after greeting them, he related one by one all the things that God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. When they heard it, they glorified God. So first of all, they are excited about the ministry that Paul had had. Obviously, the Spirit is moving within the Gentiles. And they said to him, you see, brother, how many thousands there are among the Jews of those who have believed? They're all zealous for the law. Everybody have that translation? Zealous for the law. Okay. We're going to come back to that for a second. Verse 21, and they have been told about you that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or walk according to our customs. Are those true statements from what we see in Paul's ministry? Was he telling people not to be circumcised? Or was he telling them not to, what was the other one? Walk according to their customs. Well, Paul himself is going into their customs. We had already seen a time a couple of chapters ago where Paul had to go somewhere to finish a vow. So even in his ministry, he was still engaging in what you might call temple work. He was still fulfilling vows, engaging in vows. As far as walking according to the customs, what did he do every Sabbath? He went to the synagogue. He's still following all their customs. Maybe not all the food customs. Zealous for the law and forsaking Moses are probably the same idea. Okay? How many customs did Moses give the Jews in the law? Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots. Okay? Even when you're reading the law, it looks ultra-legalistic, and yet all the time, you have a couple of words show up. Purge the sin, or it's purge the something from among you. I think it's uncleanness is the term. That shows up tons, and for I am the Lord shows up all the time. Throughout the law and all these customs, there was a thing to do, but the reason was what God kept pointing them back to. These two reasons still existed throughout Paul's ministry. In fact, that's what James told him. We have some things that you're not supposed to do, but we're doing it for the sake of the gospel in Jesus Christ. Okay? We have those issues. So even though it looks strictly legalistic, these issues are here, and these are the things that David sings about later on. All the time. So we still have the issue of the heart going on. We still have the issue of the motivation going on, to the point that in Malachi, God tells them, I wish that somebody would close the doors to the temple so that nobody would offer any more sacrifices. They're all detestable. Well, isn't a detestable sacrifice better than none? No, actually, no, it's not. I wish you just shut it down. So here's God who said, here's the temple and here's how you do it, and they were doing it wrong, and so he said, just don't do anything. So we still have the issue of the heart. The reason I bring that up is the issue of the law and Moses can be strictly legalistic. And Paul expressly stands against the legalistic side of following the law. But he also engages in this issue that the law and following the law can be a benefit, like you said, when it's done for worship, when it's done for seeing all that God has done and provided. So what about today? Is it okay today for a Jew or a Gentile to reenact the issues of the law today?
Well, what's usually missed in that is it's essentially impossible to do so. There is no temple. There are no sacrifices. Everything else is derivative.
Okay.
So they reinvented Judaism.
So we have the issue of specifically temple things. There are others.
Sure. What? Secondary at best.
Okay. One of the secondary issues is festivals.
Which all involve sacrifices. Circumcision involves sacrifice. Everything involves sacrifice.
I don't know how to spell the rest of that. Is it okay to be doing these things to please God? God... There was a time in the Israelite nation when they didn't have the temple.
But like the sacrifice, I mean the today isn't really in the wrong by doing that, because it brings back remembrance, just like our communion service brings to remembrance what Jesus did for us. But if they're doing it for the wrong reason, then it's wrong.
Okay.
I like what Jesus said. I didn't come to abolish the law, but I came to fulfill it. All of these requirements and things, they've been fulfilled. To try and dredge them back up and do them again would be to diminish what Christ's done. So, can we do them, like she said, in remembrance? Yeah, nothing wrong with that. But Jesus has already fulfilled any religious benefit you would get from those.
Okay. So, would we be better off here if we strictly held to the festival calendar? Are we missing out? Nobody's willing to say yes.
I think we are. Okay. I think because all of those festivals pointed to Christ, and if you celebrate them with the right motive, like looking back at how Christ or how God interwove his whole calendar even to point to Christ, it's really cool. So, I mean, part of me thinks we're missing out, not in a religious aspect, but in a seeing how big God is aspect.
But to what extent do you celebrate them? You go to kill another animal?
Hey, I'm all for eating food.
We'll call it a barbecue.
You know, it goes back to the heart issue too, though, because, the festivals are fine. But have we proven that we've always done things right, even in our culture today? I mean, you look all the way back. Help me out here. I can't remember where it's written. Is it Leviticus? Where they're commanded to have their festivals, and what's God tell them? I hate your festivals.
Right.
I told you to have these, but I hate them. Well, why?
Yeah.
Because it's no longer about him. And we can very easily lie to ourselves and say, I do this, and I do it out of an act of worship. But I'm not actually worshiping him. I'm just using that as an excuse to make this okay to do. You know what I mean?
I'm going to use what you just said. I'm going to say worship for me. Now, this is the wrong way to say it, but we've had examples of drug use and violence and sexuality and the rejection of being with the church because it's worship for me. Is that an appropriate way to say this? Because we might say, hey, as long as it's leading you to worship God, it's okay.
Just depends on how honest with yourself you are.
So we have the issue of honesty.
Because it is going to be different for some people. Some people are more musically inclined to where their heart is truly stirred worshiping through music. Well, all of us should be stirred through music, but some more than others, because
right.
That's just where their heart is. Some, just in reading their scripture, reading the Bible and learning something new, stirs their heart. It might not for someone else. So to say it's the same for everyone.
So do we allow everything into the conversation? So yeah, we have music and we have communion and we have preaching the word and we have those typical things, but I think the church has found over the years that there's some wrong ways to do that. I would offer this idea that honesty can become a problem when the heart attitude is wrong. Probably one of the most honest people, authentic to the bone, was Adolf Hitler. The problem that he had was that it was false. There has to be something to our worship or our activities or the way that we live life that has to be true. It's not just, this is how I feel and so it's okay. You may find that within that realm of what is okay, that's where worship is found. But the epistles are all over the place on talking about what's okay and what isn't. So I'm just really offended by the Christian community, and so I just don't go to church. I never meet with any Christians ever. Well, Paul's already addressed that. You hang out with your covenant community. Don't forsake the gathering together of the saints. Now, that's probably not in a building like this. It could be in your home. Either way, this I'm alone in my Christianity because that's worship for me doesn't fit on a true level. Okay? Violence within the community as an act of worship is not true. Drug use and alcoholism to a point of debauchery and stupidity does not fit within the community of Christ. So there is this issue of, we have guidelines. We have guidelines. There's, like Chuck said, there's not this explicit, this is the way it is for everyone. And yet we still have some guidelines that we have to follow. It has to be true. Okay, so anyway, verse 21 is the charges that are brought against Paul. People are saying that you're telling everyone to reject the customs. Verse 22, what then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you have come, meaning everyone's going to know you're here, so what are we going to do about this? Verse 23, do therefore what we tell you. We have four men who are under a vow. Purify yourself. Pay their tab or whatever you want to call it. We talked about this, 2 months ago. The idea of these vows were for temple activities. Paul is re-engaging in those things.
It was also about purification, too. He'd just been out with the Gentiles for 30 years, 15 years at least, since his last time. And he's technically unclean to all the Jewish people until he goes through a sanctification process or purification through this vow, at least as I understand it. So when he comes back in, he can't really be part of the community until he's done this. And he's listening to his elders who are telling him,
I'm going to keep reading from verse 27. When the 7 days were almost completed, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man who is teaching everyone everywhere against the people and the law in this place. Moreover, he even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled the holy place." That was the charge brought against Paul, that he had defiled the temple, both with the people that he had brought in and the fact that he was with them. So yes, this is definitely a part of purification for Paul himself. Okay? This is on a religious level, though. Everybody following that? This is not a cultural thing. This is on a religious level. It's a little bit like going into a church where they do believe in the you got to dress in your Sunday best. It's a little bit like going in dressed like Chuck. Okay, that's going to be a problem. So Chuck's actually going to go buy a suit and go sit with them. That's a religious level issue. Everybody, this is potentially damaging to the gospel. You are saying it's Christ and Christ alone, and yet you went out and bought a three-piece suit. So this is far more delicate than we tend to admit. So he's been cleansed, or he's going to engage in being cleansed, and he's gonna go about doing his thing while he's there. He's going to be arrested, and he's going to be sent to Rome. This is Paul's last hurrah, okay? And he's going as a Jew, right? Make no mistake, he hasn't rejected Judaism. So, the thing I want us to think about, and we've got a couple of minutes, is why we do these things. Not just Paul, which we've been talking about the whole time, but we've been hinting at ourselves. Why do we do the things that we do? Has anybody gone to a church service or a church gathering in another country? Was it different? Different how? I want to hear some examples.
Guatemala, they're speaking different languages. Like the one that we went across the lake, they have Spanish and their own mother tongue, so they were speaking two different languages, so you couldn't understand it.
Okay, okay.
In Russia, they worshipped all day long, and they had flags and dancers wearing dresses up on stage dancing to the worship music.
Okay. In Papua New Guinea, they had to be reminded to wear clothes because we were there. So I didn't actually witness that one, but it was close.
In the Philippines, people didn't necessarily show up on time, and they weren't expected to.
That's not just the Philippines. In Morocco, the Berbers would, in the depth of worship through music, the women would go out with their hey! It was actually quite beautiful, very startling.
Yeah, startling, yeah, I bet.
Same thing in Washington, D.C., in an all-black church.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Very energized, and the whole body participates in worship.
Mm-hmm. Which one's right? If one of them, like if one of those Moroccan women, in the middle of one of our songs, busted out the Xena Warrior Princess. You think that'd be distracting? Would it be okay?
I think it would be fine. It's just not our culture, so we would probably be like, "What's going on?"
I guess this maybe is my opinion, but things that are different are okay, but things that create barriers. Coming in to the building and worshiping. I know, especially with the three-piece suit thing, people feel that, like, I'm not good enough to get in there because I'm, you know, I've seen churches where everyone drives a Mercedes and dresses up in a $2,000 suit. You know, they exist. And yeah, so there's a barrier. So are the rituals and things that you do creating barriers for people coming in and worshiping God, or are they just different? So I think that's the key distinction.
So we have the issue of the person coming in, but what about the people who are in there and someone else comes in? Are we going to look at that person? Okay, maybe not the three-piece suit, but that person over there who keeps raising their hands, or that person over there who... they're trying to dance. Would you stop? Just stand still. Hands at your side. Don't look around. Just stare at the screen.
See, and I don't know how much we can actually relate with the other cultures, because every one of us here come from a different background, right? So I came to Christ later in life. So I've never dressed up in my entire life. So, but then at the same time, it'd be easy for someone like me to go do the same thing, but on the other side, and judge that guy wearing the three-piece suit. It's like, you're not here for worship, you're here because, well, maybe he just likes to dress up. I don't know. But you know what I mean? It's like, so we all come from all these different backgrounds, and then what we tend to do, which is not okay, is we try to worship or hang with people only like ourselves, right? And then we're missing the complete point of, listen, what we have in common has nothing to do with our background, nothing to do with the way we dress, nothing to do with, you know, whatever.
Huge
Everything
list.
That we have in common is Christ. That's what brings us together. That's what, we were actually talking about this in our home group.
Yeah.
You know, you have the, you know, the start of the Philippian church. You have the jailer. You have the
demon possessed girl.
Demon possessed girl, and you have the
Lydia. Yep.
They're all completely different backgrounds, completely opposite people. Apart from Christ, they would probably never even talk to each other. But what they have in common is Christ, and that's what brings them together. And that's what we focus on, is what we all have in common is Christ. That's what brings us together. That's what makes us thicker than blood. Clothes or whatever else their form of rituals we have,
right?
But to come to Christ and say, everyone needs to have my mindset on the way you dress or the way you do communion. Well, you should probably have the correct mindset. But you know what I mean. cultural issues.
Right.
Well, and I mean, it's pointed to in Paul's writings, you know, most cities of it, most towns just had that one Christian church. And, you know, that I think that got perverted later on with the Catholic Church. And I mean, the Orthodox Church, they all did the same thing.
Right.
Where it became a monopoly on how things were done.
Right.
It was good back then, for the most part, it was good back then that you didn't mix up all the different people in town.
Yeah.
And now we have a completely different model here in the United States.
Right.
Where even a small town is going to have at least two churches. And so you're going to be like A or B. And then you go to a big city and it's just, you know,
right.
It's all over the place. Which again, I think is mostly good, but you do have those churches where you teach weird stuff. And you go, well, people come out of there, they're going to be a little bit.
It still has to be founded on the truth. It's not just whatever we think should be happening.
Yeah.
We're going to close. Were you going to say something, Glenn?
Well, I was going to say, you're not going to resolve this, are you? I mean, we're out of time.
Right, yeah, we're not going to fix it.
Can we resolve this?
Paul leaves us hanging. He's going to get arrested and we don't get to hear the end of it. Dear God, I thank you for being with us here today as we do engage in some tough topics. Lord, I pray that we would be mindful of the things that we do and that other people engage in and what they believe. That we would all be devoted to the truth, the sufficiency of Christ on the cross, and that nothing can bring us to God but Him. But other than that, Lord, there is so many ways that we can worship You, engage in the community, and help us to not be either legalistic or condemning of those around us. I pray in Jesus' name, amen.